this week. Gold recorded the sharpest gain in over a year as the dollar plunge continued, and the Dow Jones Industrials blasted into orbit, gaining over 1,000 points. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone, and happy President's Day to U.S. listeners. Chris Walczyk back with you. Another Muy Grande-sized episode. Bitcoin blasted off the launch pad in SpaceX Elon Musk-style fashion, eclipsing 10,000. The Dow added 1,000 points. Gold is on the cusp of its first real breakout in about 7 years. You know, with news like this across the board, it almost makes this job easy. So making it even more fun, Arch Crawford, head of Crawford Perspectives, returns to the show. He's very nervous on U.S. equities, noting that the correction might continue in 2018. We discussed the Carillion fiasco. That, of course, was the construction firm that had a partnership with the government in the U.K. It simply was the number one shorted company from 300 down to under 14 and then bankruptcy in a very brief period of time. This was completely avoidable, several weeks warning. And then, of course, we also talk about the volatility plunge. There was a 95% collapse in the short ETF XIV volatility fund in Switzerland. And this is essentially where folks were taking huge bets that volatility would continue to go down and stocks go up without end. Well, we all know how that turns out. It's called return to the mean, my friends. Arch thinks the precious metals have just put in a 5-year bottom, and I think he knocks this one right out of the park. I think we're on the cusp of really a big breakout. I see 1,500, 1,600, but again, no promises, just technical analysis. Peter Grandich, he says he hasn't been this bullish on gold in his 34 years on Wall Street. He's also bearish on U.S. shares, but he, of course, covered his shorts wisely last week. He agrees with the work of Nick Barishef that essentially the pension funds, endowment funds, are so underweighted on precious metals, their investment alone could send these tiny markets into the stratosphere. And in the Alpha Stocks newsletter, I outline just why Bitcoin might be making this recovery and just why it might just continue for the next week or two. You'll certainly want to log in if you haven't yet. If you haven't yet signed up, we have all the stock picks, candidates, as well as our favorite tokens, coins, and crowdfunding, ICOs, everything of interest. I think you're going to find it. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report, and we're always happy to field your questions and comments on the Q&A hotline. That's 641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. And we are still offering free Bitcoin cold storage wallets to every new Alpha Stocks subscriber of 1 year and up. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited this week, the sharpest weekly advance in about a year as the U.S. dollar slid to the lowest point in years. Gold ended the week up sharply at $13.37. Silver added 57 cents, 4%, finishing at $16.71. The precious metals XAU also added an impressive 6% at $83.23. Black gold, West Texas Intermediate crude added over $2, 4%, finishing at $61.55 a barrel. And the Bitcoin ETF up 24% at $17.76. The year the shot was heard around the world. Well, one of the top stories moving the markets this week, clearly news from the Commerce Department regarding a 24% tariff on steel imports and a 7.7% tariff on aluminum imports, surprised commodities investors. The Commerce Department spokesperson noted these imports threaten to impair national security. Plus, rumors of inflation continue to keep policymakers concerned, and that, of course, lights the fire under safe haven investments. Precious metals, bottom line, and Bitcoin. From a technical vantage point, gold just couldn't be in a much more favorable position. This 5-year consolidation is well above the 50 and 200 period moving average, and it appears to be winding up for again, an explosive move, but we've been waiting for years for that to unfold, and I think it's just a powder keg looking for a spark. Silver also looks good, but a little less positive, a very similar pattern that we can see in the XAU gold shares. And Bitcoin looks like it is ready to consolidate. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, an area cloud was seen over U.S. equities. Following the sixth straight winning session on the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow blasted into orbit for the week over 1,000 points, 4%, ending at 25,219. The S&P 500 picked up 112 points at 2732, and the NASDAQ added a very impressive 264, ending at, hold on to your hat, 7,240. The top story moving the markets, housing starts for last month blasted into orbit 10%. That's an annual pace of 1.33 million, surpassing even the strongest forecast of economists. Housing starts really are just about my favorite economic indicator, one of the few that I think you can bet the farm on. When we see a nice solid trend like we've had for years, I don't worry at all about the economy. It's just such an important component of today's economic model, in many ways the engine that seems to be keeping this nation afloat. U.S. shares bottom line. Well, it looks like my call for the bottom in U.S. equities was right on the mark. I was even surprised, though, by the 1,000-point rally. The FOMC meeting is slated for next month, indicating very high odds of a rate hike. That should be our first of the year. Plus, the 7 indicator greed to fear index from USA Today, at the lowest extreme I've ever seen, maybe even recorded, despite the 1,000-point rally. Bullish news for investors. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. My featured guest today, Arch Crawford, combines technical analysis with the planetary alignments, astronomical anomalies. Welcome back, Arch.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
You have been very concerned about these markets for a while. Do you see this as an ultimate zenith?
Well, I said in my November, December, January letters that I thought we were building a top pattern, which might take months, but that the first portion of it should be the last of several cycles topping. The last one was January 25th, and I wrote that up and sent it out to everybody. And, of course, the top was the 26th. Maybe the long-term top, all we could go down a few minor weeks and then rally to the seasonal high in late April or early May, and then we'll see from that. But the most dangerous portion may come during the eclipses in the summer.
I'm sure you heard that the British company, Carillion, a partnership between the Crown and construction firm Carillion, sort of a Fannie Mae scenario. Well, it was the most heavily shorted for nearly a year. And of course, as we all know now, it collapsed in a very brief period of time. Well, fast forward to last week, another big theme that the institutions and the deep pockets and the money managers had been rolling into was the short volatility.
I wrote about the unnatural slimness of the volatility, and that the only thing that would make the markets go down at all were foreign events that were unexpected and uncontrollable. Like, number one was the Swiss pulling out of the euro, the peg to the euro, and then the China devalued the yuan, and then the Brexit.
The idea is, or was at least, you know, you just can't lose. I mean, the market's going up and up and up. We're in a runaway bull market. It's a permanently high plateau. The new status quo. Who would dare fight the trend? There was I believe it was Swiss-backed ETN, or ETF, if you will, that essentially was a heavily leveraged, short, bearish volatility. The idea was it was a leveraged bet for everyday investors, you know, wrapped up nicely in a closed-end fund, that the stock market would keep going up. It collapsed from 140 in just a few days' time to, at last check, 5. But I saw 50 million day volume at 145. I mean, that's some serious dough changing hands. And I noticed a breakdown in the weekly. It gave a whole week and then a couple more days of warning. You had a window of opportunity. Any thoughts on the volatility disaster?
Only that I predicted in the letter the top day, and it was one day off. Thought it would drop fairly sharply, but then the first 3 or 4 days, the advanced declines deteriorated very rapidly, and that kind of locked it in as a strong negative to me.
It may have been the largest either one day or one week percentage move. It was close to 100% on the VIX.
It was a huge 115% increase. I am not particularly in, I feel that that's terribly, terribly important. I think the level has some significance, but the level I had on the front of my letter in, I think I did it January, the late January, the February letter. And I said, I had the VIX picture on the first page with it breaking above the high in the last, I don't know, 2.5 years. I've forgotten what the time frame was, but it was the highest it's been in a long time. And then the next 2 or 3 days, it went through the roof.
The rest of the world is only waking up to the brilliance of Nassim Taleb, Dr. Nassim Taleb. Now he's teaching, as I understand, in New York. If you look at his Anti-Fragile, you can make bets all day long, but you must limit risk. And it's the black swans, it's the fragile nature of the markets that people forget about. You know, what they're trying to do is pick up pennies, and they're risking dollars to do it.
They had instituted widely that you could protect yourself in the market by selling the S&P futures, which were fairly new at the time. If it went down so much, you sell so many futures, and then it goes down more, you sell more futures. What happened with that? You were supposed to be protected to a five sigma event, statistical event. On the day of the crash in 87, it went 7 sigma, which is 100 times more.
I recently listened to an extremely successful retired investor from Wall Street, made quite a fortune and is rather renowned. I'll keep his name out of this. He was talking about Bill Gross. Now, I know you follow these markets, and you may have seen that he's thrice called the top of the bond market. He pointed out, look, what these really sharp folks that are making all these calls do, they're hedged. So they come on and they say, hey, I love the S&P 500. They go long the S&P futures, and they buy puts or another arrangement, which maybe you're risking 1 or 2% on the downside. If it works out, yeah, they make a fortune, and they're levered too. If they're wrong, they lose pennies along the way. And who cares? You know, that'll be a lower price. I'll buy it back again, and I'll do the same arrangement. You know, mom, pa, kettle, they don't have the sophistication or the leverage or the opportunity or the knowledge to deploy such sophisticated financial maneuvering.
The gold is making a huge triangle pattern that it's been in for almost 5 years. It's been in a bottoming pattern for almost 5 years. And the triangle in the latter part of it, it's broken above the triangle like 3 or 4 times and fallen back in 1 or 2 or 3 days into the pattern. But if it can hold above that a couple of days or have a continuation or a good breakout is followed by momentum and volatility and volume. So if it gets the volatility and the volume coming up more than 1 day or 2 days, then I would say we could go a lot higher in gold. I'm intermediate and long-term excited about it. And short-term, maybe more downside, maybe some sideways. We're waiting to see. I want to see technical confirmations of things.
Short term, I'm neutral here as well. But if you look at the monthly, I don't know if you get a chance to do this. I think most people are too short term focused. The dollar on one screen, the monthly, the gold on the other. And you notice a rather interesting and compelling couple of features here. You see a parabolic 2 or 3 years in the U.S. dollar. You see a bottoming parabolic bowl-like shape, fits a parabola almost perfectly on gold. You know what's upsetting investors, Arch, is that gold's not getting the follow-through that they were looking for.
Well, it will in time, I'm sure. But the thing is, there is a crowd, a very powerful and moneyed crowd that doesn't want it to go up. So that has been holding it back for years, and at some point they're going to lose control. But the dollar made that neckline. It broke down seriously. Technical, very, very negative. Then it's come back up to kiss the neckline, which is traditional, before it collapses. I'm hoping for our own personal reasons. I hope it doesn't collapse, but it might. And whatever it does, it might not be good for everybody in this country.
I think it's well said. You know, it's what we call the run for the hills, grab the bug out bag moment. I kid some of my other guests, you know, do we really want to be Mr. Burns at the top of the hill with marauding crowds of pitchforks and torches, right? Really doesn't do anyone, except maybe the 1% of the 1%, the upper echelon of our overlord, cui bono? Who benefits? They benefit. But the rest of us, I don't think any of us have probably procured enough to weather a complete currency collapse. We could be on the cusp of a second wave higher in the precious metals bull market.
I would say that if we get the breakouts, then it could certainly happen. The way the charts look on the dollar is semi-confirming.
Do you then have any particular sectors or asset classes that you're monitoring in anticipation of a bull rally?
Not particularly. I like shorts. I shorted 200% in January. I got stopped out of the first batch, but I'm still 100% short, being monitored by the services since the 15th of January.
Do you have any inkling or indication as to what we will eventually recognizes the impetus for the top?
I think that's not out of the question. I certainly wouldn't guarantee that, but I don't know how much of this whole thing was by the interest rate rising fairly sharply over a short period of time.
Of course, we are facing further rate hikes, and nothing could derail an economic recovery, if you really want to call it that. It's an artificial recovery. I think we'd all probably agree here today. Nothing could derail that faster than higher rates, because mortgages and new construction and corporate expansion and sales, everything hinges on artificially low rates. And without that, you know, it's almost pulling the carpet, you might agree.
Well, I think you summed it up very well. Rates go up, the world is swamped in debt. So the rates going up are going to hurt multitudes of people and corporations and whatnot. So we'll see how it goes.
I'd like to shift gears over to a different area of personal interest of ours and hopefully some of our listeners. It's not really the purview of this broadcast. I've always been fascinated by technology, particularly electrical engineering and computer sciences. This progression of artificial intelligence, that we are coming to that Ray Kurzweil moment. Everyone I'm sure knows Ray Kurzweil, probably the greatest forecast record in technology, at least 87% correct record over 40 years. He's claiming by 2029, we will pass the singularity where AI is at least as intelligent as a human being. I believe actually we've already passed that in individual components, meaning they just crushed the game of Go, 100 times more difficult than chess, or at least more moves per move. It wasn't thought that would be done for a decade. Actuarial jobs, accounting jobs, high paying, very high level, just replaced in Japan by a single deep mind IBM artificial intelligence. Something like 37 jobs, millions of dollars saved, but also very important jobs lost. But they recently took a cab ride, you know, on the Kaiser Report in, I think it was Nevada, in an fully automated taxi. And what was so compelling was they pulled up to an intersection and they're asking, well, how many of these things are out here? On top of three SUVs right next to them at the intersection, spinning artificial intelligence on all three of them as they just drove off. It was as though 15 to 20% of the traffic was already controlled.
I do not have clear thoughts about that. I enjoy driving, and men enjoy their cars. And I think it's partly a continuation of the demasculinization movement. They want people to not have drivers. And the other thing that concerns me is that in recent years, some of the electronics in engines have been proven to be hacked, be able to be hacked. And if somebody wants to get rid of somebody, they might just take over their car and run it at 100 miles an hour into a brick wall.
You are right. That could be used to injure you. But, you know, it also could be used to stop someone from chasing you. Call in to the local constabulary. You give them the license plate number and description, tell them where you are, and they shut down the engine. What I'm saying is the level of hacker knowledge it would require, I would say, is quite substantial. And there's a remarkable show called Cyber War, and it's on the Vice Channel, and they actually dedicated nearly an entire episode to exactly what you just said. The host of the show sat in a car with the hacker. The hacker had a laptop in his lap, and he crashed their vehicle in a parking lot multiple times using the laptop. I mean, this is not a thing of science fiction. This is science fact right now. We're all, I think, deeply intrigued by the idea of an artificial intelligence and the robotic technology. And we've all seen Sophia, I'm sure, online. I don't know if you're familiar with Nick Bostrom. And, of course, there's the Hugo fellow, another researcher from Australia. All started out excited about AI. I mean, it was their forte. Now they're scared, just like Elon Musk. We see a real turnaround on their points of view. And so I thought, well, let's look into this further. Professor Bostrom outlined a fascinating scenario. You think you're just going to unplug it, right? When we get AI, you're just going to put it in a little container and you're going to pull the plug and Bob's your uncle. What he tried to make clear is when they surpass human intelligence, it will go parabolic because it will start rewiring itself. And they're already doing this, by the way. So what happens is you go to pull the plug and guess what it does? It shorts out a certain part of its circuit, which retains just enough static electricity to send out Morse code to a printer. That printer, 3 miles away through the window, shot out a laser beam. That printer receives it and then sends in a chain of events that leads to it getting electricity turned back on. A clone copy of itself, hide it in multiple cyber deep cyber locations. Well, listen, as we wrap up today, are there any other market insights you'd like to share with the listeners?
The main one was that the first 2 or 3 days down, the advanced declines went horribly negative, which is unusual, and some people came up with the Hindenburg omen, which I think is based on something like that, going very negative advanced declines right off a top. I don't know what the other specifics were, but an important sell signal in my mind. Now that we get a low in March, middle of March maybe, and a rally back up at the seasonal highs in late April and May, there may be more danger coming in at the eclipses during the summer of next year. And then as we go into election, or I don't know what is going to happen with that, but it's exceedingly bitter and is very unusual since like the Civil War. And I am concerned about that.
That we could see a time of political or social upheaval then, similar to that tragic time in our history?
Yes. There are elements in our society that are trying to make that happen, and I hope they don't.
Frankly, between you and I think we're already in the middle of a cold civil war, and it has been underway for several decades.
I could see that. Well, it's a time to be especially careful and especially risk averse, put it that way. That's what we talk about, risk.
So you like cash, bear funds. You certainly wouldn't be looking for bargains right now in U.S. equities. Take this time here, if you'd like, to promote your activities in a couple of interesting events, and maybe folks listening will have a chance to join those events.
In Orange County, at around 6, I think, speaking for SCAN, Southern California Astrological Network, Saturday, I think around midday, I'm speaking in San Diego, and I don't remember the name of their name, but San Diego and astrology would probably find that group. Okay, will do. Bye-bye.
Welcome back, Peter Grandage.
Always a pleasure, Peter.
A lot of volatility in recent weeks. It caught millions of investors off guard. You, of course, went on record several weeks before the smackdown saying that you'd gone short the market a few weeks ahead of time.
Sure, you're right. I began the year calling it the most
precarious stock market that I've seen in the 34 years I was in the market. Yes, I indeed personally went short a week ago on Friday in the middle of the day. I actually covered those shorts. Nevertheless, the feeling of what I believe the market has come to remains. I think the rally that we've seen since that Friday afternoon up until when we've spoken now is a typical rebound in something that I wrote about maybe 2 weeks ago, that we have reached what was called a parabolic arc formation, which almost has 100% batting average in terms of predicting major reversals in markets. And the typical first rebound, which we've envisioned, usually lasts somewhere between 7 to 10 trading days, and that's kind of the environment we're in now. So I think while we're obviously rebounded, I don't think people should say this was just a blip and everything is hunky-dory again. I really think it was a warning for those who have yet to lower their exposure to a great extent. My personal belief has been, depending on how soon someone would need principal usage of monies that they have in equities, that the minimum they should have lowered it compared to 2017 holdings was 50%. And as much as 90% if they needed the capital within a year or two. So I remain very, very, I guess the description is bearish, looking past the next few days. And I really think that at the same time, and I don't want to jump ahead for your questions, you also know that I've also spoken about that I believe we were in the earliest stages of a mega new bull market in gold that will eventually take us to new nominal new highs.
It's interesting, nearly 1,000 gold miners were trapped underground in a South African gold mine. They were actually released, every single one of the miners, this week, so that's certainly a big positive. We'd love to hear some big positives on the gold market, but despite the swoon in the U.S. dollar, we haven't had that move up. You know, because for years all we heard was, well, it's the investors' passion for U.S. equities. No, it's the U.S. dollar strength. Well, the dollar is in the most precarious position that we've seen maybe in years, and U.S. equities have some people shaking their heads. So what's it going to take to send the yellow metal back to its former highs?
Well, Chris, I'm in a camp. First of all, I support the people to know that I have no potential bias towards gold. It's been years since I worked in the metals and mining industry. The business that I do in estate planning and business planning really has no impact for gold. I don't sell anything that's going to benefit if, you know, people get worrisome and all the things that are normally trotted out for why you should own gold. I'm looking at it purely as someone that has watched it, you know, going on well into my fourth decade. And I can tell you that I actually think it's performed very, very well. First of all, to understand, particularly here in North America, I think if we went to any particular financial institution and looked at any 100 accounts, whether they're managed accounts, institutional accounts, or investors, I doubt that we have seen in the last 1 year or 5 years that anybody has purchased physical bullion. There might have been some ETFs purchased in a small scale and maybe a couple mining stocks, but there's been real no interest from an investment standpoint in North America for gold. So the very fact that it has not collapsed, which most people had predicted for the last several years, I mean, you couldn't go a week without reading some article somewhere as of somebody talking about gold being a relic and going to be under 1,000. The very fact that as we speak today, it is once again approaching what I have termed the battle of the bulge line for the gold bears, that the fact that it's even managed to do that in the face of just an enormous interest up until most recently for financial assets. And let's face facts, you're not going to have financial assets making records after records like they did last year and have gold following that same path. They really are and should be working in opposite tandems. Now the fact is that we've gotten a real whiff of inflation. I think people have at least started to see that maybe, just maybe, the happy days are no longer here in the financial asset world, and both stocks and bonds are at least in for a correction. I think it's going to be a lot more, but minimally that. And you're just starting to see that perk up in the gold interest. I'm very, very constructively bullish. I think if you look back at the charts, You'll see since the beginning of 2017, after bottoming of under 1,200, just a classical higher low scenario with the 1,375-1,400 area key resistance. Each time we retreat less. And that's my Battle of the Bulge line. That's the last line that I think the bears, which is the ample number of people on gold worldwide, they're not bulls, have as a defense to keep claiming that somehow, this is still a continuation of a bear market that, you know, began, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And if and when we go over, in my heart of heart, it's when, I think we're going to see an enormous rush into gold. I think the momentum players and so much of the money that has been in financial assets will find reasons to believe in gold, and before you shake your eye, you're going to be looking at 1500 or 1550, and I think that can all take place in the year 2018. So I'm a real bull. I don't have anything other than personal reasons to believe in that, and I'm wholeheartedly convinced that we're in the earliest stages of a new bear bull market that will eventually, and my target is 2020, if not sooner, make nominal all-time highs for gold.
Seth Klarman's Margin of Safety. This is kind of a cult classic in the investing world. From time to time, you'll see it $2,000 to $3,000 a copy, because, of course, limited edition on eBay and Amazon and elsewhere. So it's a rather rare but coveted book. One of the excerpts was regarding an interesting parallel between the risks that investors take when other folks manage their money, that fiduciary risk. It's so easy to manage other people's money when one has no skin in the game. And he likened it to the Roman architects who built the aqueducts, of course, 2,000-3,000 years ago. As they were removing the scaffolding under the arches for the aqueducts, actually had to stand there underneath it. So they knew first, he said, whether or not they had offered good advice in their work. Brings me to the point of gold. You know, you talked about the risk inherent in equities, and for the most part, people have just forgotten about this. We've had almost a decade of blue skies, most amazing in our lifetimes. Now, we learn in the last couple of weeks, not such a bad idea to have a modicum of insurance in the portfolio.
We have car insurance, we have home insurance. Most of us neither want to see our cars go or our homes burn down, but we want something there in case it does. But I think the other story that is not, and again, you have to forgive me, I just don't read or engross myself in the metals market intraday or day-to-day as I once did. But I think one of the untold stories, and I think if I'm correct, and if this is a new bull market, and by the end of this year, we're all excited because it's broken above 1,400 and all, I think one of the hindsight stories that'll go back, and people say, well, what helped lift this, was the finally coming to the surface of substantial cases that gold had been manipulated, that there was indeed a group of people, despite certain parties that I used to have to argue with in the media who said no such thing as manipulation, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that caveat being taken out, that those folks were basically no longer able to spoof or whatever the terminology that was being used of what they did, and it allowed the physical market to really become the dominant player, the COMEX, or which I and I know some others had given it the nickname the CRIMEX, is no longer a scene of death for those who go long in gold. And if you do notice, and if you look at the last 12 months, if and when we've had these suddenly downdrafts, they don't last past a few hours or maybe a day or two. And 10 or 20 years ago, they lasted for months. So I think the other thing that's bullish for gold is the nemesis that had been there purposely and willfully, decisions by parties or parties to suppress gold or keep it at a disadvantage has been removed from the market. And I think truer, more fundamentals have taken hold. And like I said, the last line, the last gasp that the bears could argue that somehow this is all still a big counter-trend rally in a cyclical bear market that goes back to the 2011-12 top is that 1375-1400 area. If and when we go through it, and I'm convinced we will, there will not only be no more argument about a bear market, but I think we're going to see a tremendous influx of momentum traders that will quickly push up gold another $100, $150.
I see the same thing in, on USA Watchdog. You know, they've done a great job showing the monthly chart a nice rounding bottom parabola, you know, for gold, and at the same time a rounding top on the U.S. dollar. I mean, it's a perfect world scenario for investors once we get that breakout. Our U.S. POTUS made a decision that I thought was another important positive for America in the decision to allow gold, silver, copper, and uranium mining in Utah, wilderness that's simply sitting there, millions of acres. I'm sure we can all recognize that we have to have industry because that's the backbone of this society. The Russian government has purchased 2/3 of all the gold mined in its country, and it's a large gold producer, one of the tops, buying this from local banks even to add to their reserves. Governments are starting to wake up. Central banks may not be telegraphing their interests and their plans, but we can see the fingerprints that they want gold, and they have a tendency to accumulate and hold on to it for decades. You'd probably agree.
Perhaps even a far bigger news regarding the President of the United States was his decision in recent days to open the floodgates again to budget deficit spending, and really to heck with any thought of tackling the debt problem that just is skyrocketing. I think that's an extremely bullish scenario for gold. I think it's one of the reasons why the dollar has come off and why the bond market is going to have an additional problem, because it looks like the president, what he might have campaigned on about draining a swamp when it came to spending and just out of control spending, it certainly is clear now that that is what's going to happen. I think there'll be a Republican conservative contingent that will try to water that down, but I think the gates have been opened. The horse is out of the barn, and I think that's another reason why that we're seeing some very sophisticated buyers of gold. This is not the general public by any means. I still think if we went and viewed those same brokerage firms this week, we would still find most in North America, you know, not making anything a purchase of gold. I think what is the buyers and why we've had such a great up day is people recognize that the dollar's got huge problems. The government spending is out of control. The debt deficits in you is a problem that's not only here to stay, but is being compounded. And at the end of the day, that at the very early part actually be a small benefit to equities. It's a negative for bonds because the perception is, well, if inflation is stronger, that means people are doing better and companies are going to be able to pass along prices. But in the intermittent to long term, that's a negative for equities too, but it's really, really bullish for the gold market. So like I said, I sit here today as we speak, and again, for no other reason other than my personal investments, I probably haven't been this bullish looking at gold for perhaps as my entire 34 years, you know, in and around the financial market. So I think there's a lot of long-term upside to it, and I certainly feel much better knowing someone has an ounce of gold in their pocket versus some junk bond or some high-flying PE ratio of 150 stock that might be up 300 or 400%, but over the next few years I think is going to greatly underperform the price of gold.
I guess it sounds like a broken record, but just have to counterbalance some of those equities gains, because we don't want to really, I think, encourage timing for the typical investor. I mean, you might say our mission here at Gold Seek Radio is to make sure that people have that insurance, the precious metals insurance. We're really hearing a theme week after week from our top guests like yourself, and that is before it was 10-15%, and even some of the more non-gold crowd type are talking about, you know, 20-30% precious metals allocation. It seems like a prudent move for most people to consider. Have I missed any topics you'd like to leave with the listeners?
We've gotten our first shot of warning in the financial markets. I think people would be ill-advised to think that that was just a fluke and we're just going to keep running up and, you know, things are going to, I think the first area of trouble will be in the bond market and followed by equities. And again, I just feel that slow and steady, but there's no question in my mind that gold has tremendous opportunity to be at substantially higher over the next few years.
Certainly seems like that's the case. Technically, stars seem to be aligned for better prices ahead. Folks should just be thinking of repositioning some of those equities gains into the undervalued. I mean, what a great time to lock in some profit. Let's get our portfolio a little better balanced and use some of those gains, not all, but some of those gains, to pick up discounted precious metals and even some of the equities. Have you looked at any of the precious metals equities lately?
I think if you consider that gold has managed to move up, not as strongly as the stock market, but like I said, without any of the firepower that has helped move financial assets. Imagine, if we will, if just a small percentage, maybe it's only 1 or 2 or 3% of the money that's currently in financial assets, just decides, like you said earlier, you know, let me take some insurance. You know, gold's clearly not overpriced. Financial assets have had their day. Let me take 1 or 2% of what I have in financial assets and put it in gold. I just think that that difference alone is going to be one of the things that will propel it substantially higher. So, like I said, you get a little nervous when it looks too good to be true, but I agree with you. Certainly in my 34 years of being in and around the financial arena, I've never felt this confident that gold has an ample opportunity to go substantially higher over the next few years.
You know, Nick Bereshef's work from BMG pointed out here on the show, they've done a lot of analysis on the allocation of precious metals within the institutional community, including pension funds as well as endowment funds. The heavyweights in the ring of the markets, and they have a pittance of insurance for their constituents. They are not following the fiduciary responsibility of the prudent person. If we can believe the numbers that they're tossing out, less than 0.5% is the typical gold allocation in these funds, in these institutions, who are supposedly watching out for the best retirement possible, when even just a few of these funds start to recognize the opportunity, and not to mention the market risk in equities, we could see explosive times in the next 2 years for the precious metals. Why don't you tell folks more about some of your neat stuff online?
Sure. So the website is Peter Granich. It's Peter, then GRANDICH, one word, petergranich.com. There's actually two blogs on there. There's a blog that they can sign up for just by providing the email called Granich on Markets, and the only thing that we'll get is anytime we make things that are comments about things related to financial markets. And then the other blog is Pete Speaks, where we speak about everything else we do other than my comments on the markets. It's all free, and they just have to put in an email address, and we go from there.
Peter Granich, thanks, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Sometimes the best way to avoid biased news reports and the evil empire of fake news is to simply take time and watch actual, unedited congressional hearings. They can sometimes be lengthy, but are always insightful. One of the most important individuals in any political administration is the Secretary of Treasury. Not only does that person oversee the IRS, they are one of the chief law enforcement officers on a variety of topics that go far beyond what people often think of in regard to the Treasury Department. This week, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin was questioned by the Senate Finance Committee. You can find it online, and I recommend watching it. The opening comments, often partisan, by committee members reveal far more about their philosophy and motives than any news report. The questions and setup for the Treasury Secretary by each member reveals topics of critical importance that often don't get much play in mainstream media. My notes and executive summary about the topics discussed with regard to this insightful interaction include the following. Mnuchin is comfortable and believes in the budget projections he has set forth. He has started discussions with foreign counterparts to look at taxing companies on digital goods and internet transactions. He was asked about $120 billion, which has already been spent on stock buybacks since enacting the tax bill, versus the $5 billion that has been spent in employee pay bonuses. He responded by pointing out that a one-time bonus does not factor into the cumulative total of increased pay that will be made to employees over the course of this year. Questions were asked about the removal of the carried interest provision that benefits in large part Wall Street. He said in working with Congress, that was modified to include a holding period of 3 years. It was acknowledged that the expectation was that by doing nothing with taxes, Treasury would expect 2% economic growth each year for each of the next 10 years. By acting, he expects growth to reach at least the historic value of 3% growth each year. Different percentages were quoted with regard to how much of the benefits created from the tax plan actually will go to workers. The numbers ranged from 25% to 70%. Mnuchin stated that regarding stock buybacks, he sees them as a return of capital to shareholders. One senator provided anecdotal evidence about increases certain of his constituents were already seeing in their paychecks, which ranged from $51 to $300 per pay period. Several questions involved implementation of sanctions against Russia. Mnuchin referred to classified versus public portions of a report prepared by Treasury addressing this subject. He said the president delegated implementation of sanctions to him, and he clearly stated that sanctions are coming. One senator prefaced her questions by stating all the recent movement online with regard to release the memo supposedly came from Russian bot traffic. Mnuchin stated that guidance is coming to avoid pass-through abuses of various entities. He indicated he will look into beneficial ownership of shell corporations and, in conjunction with Congress, enact changes. He believes income growth will shrink income equality. He stated that eliminating state and local income deductions over a certain amount made the tax code more progressive. He responded to one senator regarding release of aggregated tax information for the top 400 U.S. taxpayers, in which they reportedly pay an average tax rate of 23%, and agreed to ask the IRS to revisit their reporting practices on this subject. He agreed to provide technical support to the Senate Finance Committee for success in navigating certain issues. One senator asked if bonuses paid to workers in 2017 can be deducted by corporations, even if they were not paid in that year. This was in conjunction with a question that was opposed to capping state and local deductions of property taxes. Mnuchin said guidance on this matter was a strict interpretation of current law. One senator brought up the temporary budget surplus that arose under President Clinton and commented how at that time their committee was holding hearings on what to do with that surplus. That's when I interrupted my note-taking on this hearing, and it became immediately obvious that some of these senators, if allowed to talk long enough in open hearings without a script, begin to blow their cover and reveal their contempt and arrogance for the taxpayer. By virtue of that very comparison, as a setup for that next question, it was revealed that the Senate had no intention of paying down the debt under Clinton. Not then, and certainly not now, should that situation ever present itself again. The doubling of the debt under President Obama from $10 trillion to $20 trillion was dismissed in an offhanded comment by one senator by suggesting that increase was justified because we were in a recession. That mindset, that fiscal irresponsibility, is just one reason why hopefully many more senators and congressmen will announce they are not seeking re-election in 2018. But I digress. As the hearing reached an end, Mnuchin encouraged states like New York and California to lower their taxes. Watching hearings like these is the best remedy to narratives that are selectively put forth by mainstream media. In 90 minutes, you can learn a lot by watching who is actually asking specific questions and in what tone. And from there, you can quickly form your own conclusions. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.